This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. I recently sat down with producer Taylor Quimby to hear a story about his son, who just recently turned 5.
I was sitting at my desk writing a letter not too long ago, and my son was at the coffee table just a couple feet away, and he was stacking these wooden blocks that we have. And then he just sort of says, "Oh, Daddy, when I do this at school, we call them Trump Towers." And then we knock them down and we say, "Trump Tower, Trump Tower." It goes to show you that they're always listening and it's always being absorbed. That's also the sort of social nature of kids, which is that, you know, they go off to school and all sorts of things are being picked up and tossed around like a game of telephone. And their ideas about the world are just blossoming in ways that are so weird and uncontrolled.
Whether it's attending a rally with a parent through TV commercials and yard signs, or even building blocks, kids get exposed to the sometimes unseemly world of American politics. So how and when should parents encourage and shape and inform civic engagement? There's no right way to introduce kids to civics, but we wanted to open up a conversation about that intersection of parenting and politics. So we've invited Jess Leahy on the show, an educator and author of the best-selling book, The Gift of Failure. Hello, Jess.
Hello.
Also joining us again is KJ Dell'Antonia. She's lead writer and editor for the Well Family page at the New York Times. And KJ, great to have you back with us.
Thanks.
Well, you both. Political conversations, we know, around the dinner table, they unite some families. And when kids are reaching their own decisions, can even be divisive or a way of differentiating the self. Younger kids, however, more of a blank slate. Do you remember at which age your kids started processing or talking about politics?
My kids have been really interested in politics, I feel like, from the very beginning. Of course, we live in New Hampshire, so the primary is always a big thing here. I've taken them every time that I voted, and I just, even when they were really small, they were always listening. Who is that? Wait, Obama's not president? Why doesn't Obama want to be president anymore? All kinds of questions. It's almost like it's in the air around here.
Yeah, and I've definitely taken my kids to vote with me every time. And I think between that and listening to the radio a lot in the car, mm-hmm. We have a lot of conversations about politics.
Oh, you're just reminding me of, I don't know if you remember, at the last election, there was this adorable video that went viral of a kid, you know, sort of crying and saying, "I don't want to talk about Barack Obama anymore."
I feel about my kids at this point. They are really fascinated by this one. And I'll tell you that there are just some days when I'm like, no, really, I've kind of had enough election for one day. Can I not answer your questions? Could we just not?
Yeah, I'm a little tired of talking about the conflicts that have come up at school with kids on the bus and things like that about political conversations. I think it will be really nice to be able to move on to other conversations.
Is that happening at what age, Jess?
I have a middle school student. He's going to be 13 next month. And, you know, in the back of the bus, they get into all kinds of conversations about politics, believe it or not. And, you know, these things have been coming up on nearly a couple times a week, actually. And it's very frustrating for my son to be able to figure out, you know, what's going to make another person mad. How can he be respectful? How can the other person be respectful? Why isn't the other person being respectful? That kind of thing. It's a real minefield.
So where are they getting that? Is this a sense that they've kind of developed their own set of thoughts about it? Or are they just parroting yours or someone else's?
Well, in my experience as a teacher, I think what I get to see at school is the other side of this, which is kids that come into school and do parrot what their parents say and parrot it to other students and then sort of see what comes back at them. I think it's a really good opportunity for kids to try out, you know, this is what my mom and dad believe. And what's the response to that? Is that what I believe? And I think inevitably when kids are really little, it really is just what they're hearing at home. There isn't a lot of filtering.
And have you talked to your kids about how to talk with other kids who don't agree with them or to just not say anything?
Well, one of our big topics this year has been when. So the kids are getting a lot of this in school. And school is a great place. You know, the teachers helping to facilitate the conversation. Things are going pretty well. I think they do all right with doing it with their classmates. But one thing, they have felt so vehemently about a couple of different things in this election. And at one point we were we're getting their hair cut, and the hairstyling place has a really big sign. And they really wanted to just say something. And I'm just, you know, keep telling them, you know, there are just times when the election is not a good topic. And probably a haircut is, I mean, unless you know your barber really well, this is a time just to talk about the weather.
Well, this election has been particularly divisive. So are there boundaries that you make, you know, places that you think are inappropriate to go with kids, you know, stuff that may be too scary or too weird? Is there a kind of age limit that you think is appropriate to talk with kids about politics?
I feel like one of the things that's happening in this election is that our kids are hearing a lot of really frightening rhetoric from us. I've been trying to be very careful about this, but I'm definitely hearing a lot of my friends say, you know, the kids have said, oh, really? Wait, are we really going to move to Canada? You know, is the country really going to be in danger? What's going to happen if the wrong person gets elected? I mean, there are some genuine fears, especially when you get a, you know, down in your 7, 8 year olds. There was a moment, this was the Republican debate, and someone had a lot of rhetoric about the danger coming over the Mexican border. And what, I mean, it took me about 20 minutes to talk my youngest child back down. What? Who's attacking us? What? I don't know what's happening. Yeah, it was actually terrifying.
So how did you manage it?
We try to be honest, so we really got into it. This is why some people believe that, you know, this is a danger, and this is the kind of danger he's talking about. We're not talking about, you know, we're not talking about the kind of people you see in the movie or in a cartoon coming out, people with guns. We're talking about dangers to the economy. I mean, my daughter's not that young. She's just very emotional. And so we did our best to try to explain why during an election people talk so vividly about things that, you know, maybe during a normal time of the year they might be able to be more calm about.
I'm talking about what happens when parenting and politics collide with Jess Leahy and KJ Delantonia, both of whom write about parenting and education. Do you feel like you have to be very conscious about when you're revealing something or when you're suppressing something, especially as a teacher?
Oh, I have to be really careful as a teacher. I've always been really, really careful to not put my politics out there in the classroom, especially when I first started. The very first class I ever taught was in North Carolina, and we had pulled students from all over the state. And there were some really, really conservative kids in that class and some really, really liberal kids in that class. And it was really important for me to let them air these things that they wanted to say that they had, you know, they'd heard from their parents or they'd heard in their community, because it was really important for that debate to happen between the students. It's not my job to indoctrinate my students with whatever it is I believe, but it is really important for me to facilitate that conversation.
KJ, 4 years ago, you wrote some suggestions on how to watch debates with your kids. So we've got two more to go. Any suggestions?
Get them ready. get them ready for some serious rhetoric and some serious yelling. I would say that anything younger than 12 is probably a little on the young side for a debate. I was really excited in part this year because we do have a woman as a major candidate for one of the parties. And it's obviously big. That's big for my sons and my daughters. And I've been excited to share that with them. But another interesting piece of the debates this year with older children, at least, is to talk about the different ways that moderators talk to women and talk to men. Of course, we saw that with Matt Lauer, and you know, we may see it again. We may not. We're more aware of it now. But that's an interesting point of conversation that, you know, can be a little less scary, a little less contentious. Just let's look at the language. Let's look at the different ways that they talk or approach each other and talk about whether that's been like part of your experience in the classroom.
It's so interesting. You're trying to model behavior for kids and then you're letting them watch grown-ups behave really badly.
We actually had this conversation the other day about interrupting, actually. We're a family of people that when we get excited about something, we tend to interrupt a little bit. So conversation around the debate the other night led to a great discussion about interrupting and the fact that we had seen it seeping a little bit into our conversation as of late. And maybe we should pare that back a little bit, given the example of the debate.
I was just going to say that our family and our our sort of immediate community is so filled with people on both sides of every election, really, and of this one. And I'm sort of really grateful to have to not just sit here complacently in my own firm, you know, I've already decided kind of position, but to have to go, well, you know, if we're going to go to this family dinner, you know, not everybody's going to agree, and we're going to try to be civil, but it doesn't always work out. And just know that we love each other anyway, and that there are actually there are good intentions behind both sides. And that is a message that it's really easy to lose this time around.
Well, that's very even tempered. I mean, why not just dig in, teach them to follow your candidates and argue for you?
It might work this time around, but it might be a little bit of a problem with my husband next time.
Well, both of you, I mean, a favorite part of the process for kids, what would that be? The primaries, debate season, election day. Of course, the primaries are a lot of excitement around here in New Hampshire. Is there one part that you find more educational for them than others?
I really love the process of casting the ballot, and it happens in the elementary school, the K through 8 school here in our town. And so it's real for the kids because they're watching people come in all day long to vote. And it's our friends and neighbors that, you know, are checking people in and asking how they're doing and that kind of stuff. It's a very real process here. And it's also going to mark, I think, the end of something that's gotten a little bit challenging and a little bit tiresome for us, especially living in New Hampshire. Our phone tends to ring off the hook daily with questions, pollsters, that kind of thing. So I think it's going to be a nice ending to the process.
So with about a month away, some ideas on how to continue the conversation after Election Day, or is it just time to take a breather?
No, I would say, especially as we get close, do watch whether or not your younger children are hearing things that they might find frightening. Do watch whether or not they may feel like if this election does not go the way that their family has so vehemently felt like it should, everything is going to be fine. We're going to wake up the next morning, the sun is going to rise, and their lives are really going to go on pretty much exactly the way that they have. We've said some very scary things around this campaign, and I think a lot of kids are going to need a little reassurance.
And in my classroom, I'll be talking a lot about speech writing and some of the fun speeches that are going to be coming up soon. You know, we'll have, you know, there's a big difference between the intent and the audience for the inaugural address versus, for example, the State of the Union. And I love talking about speeches and rhetoric and the purpose of various speeches. And it'll be fun talking about the transition, whatever that transition is in terms of who does what in the White House and what speechwriters do and what the chief of staff does and who these people are, who's going to get picked to do certain jobs. That's always really exciting to watch.
Well, thank you so much for that little education today. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Jess Leahy, educator and author of The Gift of Failure, KJ Dell'Antonia, author and lead writer for the Well Family page at the New York Times. Jess and KJ are also hosts of the hashtag AmWriting podcast. You can find some links to articles about parenting and politics at wordofmouthradio.org. And we'd love to know what you think. How are you managing it? Should parents avoid recruiting their kids into the party of their choice? Or is the idea of neutrality a bit of a fool's errand? How are your kids reacting to Election 2016? Are they more engaged than the last time around? Share your thoughts on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wordofmouthradio.